Hello, Nat.
Hi, Antonio. Welcome to the OneSelf podcast.
Thank you for having me. Sorry for the delay. I just deleted Zoom and here I am, baby.
Yeah, technology is acting a little wonky, it seems.
Yeah. How are you? Nice to see you again.
I'm well. I'm still in the wonderful Reno. So now it's just the detailed work, which it's like making decisions and making sure everything looks at its par. And I think that I think that's most of my challenges is sticking to the detailed work, like little caulkings, checking painting, sanding little parts, yet also putting a stop of, okay, you got to stop somewhere. Not everything is going to look pristine. And yet when you've put in your effort and time, it's like, okay, be consistent. But I also see when you're near the end, you just want it to end so more mistakes happen. So you have to really slow down that impulsivity.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. It's a rather meditative practice as well.
It is.
Yeah. Oh, good on you.
Yeah.
Check out what I've got.
Oh, look at that. Did they just use glue?
Yeah. Well, I was a bit naughty perhaps because I'm a man and I, but the first day I just literally came home and I super glued all together.
But they do use glue.
They do, yeah. So 2 days later, I decided, you know what? It's such a sensitive area. It's right down the crease. I thought, you know what? I better go. And they just did what I did. They did a better job.
Yeah, just to make sure it's patched up properly. It's kind of awkward to do it yourself to get in there when you have two hands and can push the skin more closer to it and then get the detailed. Again, detailed work.
Yes, yes.
It's perfect. Yeah. Detailed work. I'll ask you to come in to taking a breath with me so that we can meet each other in the moment. So close your eyes for a moment and take a deep breath in and slowly release. How's your heart doing?
Yeah, good. A little bit nervous, but that's all right, you know. But yeah, I feel good. I feel great. Yeah, I feel great.
What can you thank COVID for?
What a good question. It's such a hard question to ask as well, to answer as well, because, you know, I guess from a perspective where I don't want to be selfish and just speak about myself, you know. But me personally, it was the best thing that ever happened in my life, you know. It was a blessing, a huge, huge blessing. And I found it interesting, really, because I think for the first time in my life, I was being really audacious and brave and doing things I would have never in a million years thought I would. And, you know, for one, everybody was terrified to be alive, really, worrying about death, you know, potentially catching the virus. But for me, you know, on the other spectrum, I was like, blimey, you know, I was just me existing. So that was an interesting perspective. But for me, the only fears that I felt was the decisions I was making, you know, which was to allow myself to be vulnerable, basically. But yeah, it was the best thing that ever happened for me, really. The weather was amazing. And I learned to walk in meditation. I'd walk a lot. I'd get lost for hours. And it was such an amazing experience. And then I'd just come home. And, I would just journal. Just spent the majority of my time just journaling, going out for a run or what have you, and just being creative. As I said, just journaling. I've never really done that before. I've never really sat down and just journal. And interesting thing that formed out of that is from deciding to self-inquire. I mean, I had initially had a thought, but I never thought it would come into fruition, really, which became a book. And so that's what I mean about the fears and being vulnerable, because I decided to write about my life, a biography. And I was touching bases on a lot of subjects where I didn't really want to confront, for one. And I neither wanted to feel like I was exposing myself, you know, feeling like the damage would then be irreversible, that I'd be a laughing stock, you know. That's what was going through my mind, feeling like I'd be ridiculed. But at the same time with that was the idea that, I mean, I had a new perspective, really. I was like, where am I giving my life to, you know? And I started playing the perspective game. I started looking at myself, for example, I was 34 at the time. I was like, okay, I'm 34 years old. And let's assume that I've got another 34 years to live, you know? So, you know, up until from there to now, since birth to now, like, you know, this has happened. Here I am now at this point in life. So where else can I do in my life, you know? So far as a perspective game, I started to look at how many summers I've got instead, you know? And I looked at 34 summers to be so, you know, not a long time to not a lot of time left, you know? I mean, 34 summers, I started, it just gave me a different perspective. I was like, wow, that's not a lot of time. That can quickly go. And with playing that perspective game, I came to start to realize like how many, I started to kind of calculate how many times I would see my kids, how many times I might possibly see family. And all the adventures and possibilities that are out there that I'm not giving I'm not allowing myself, you know, just because I've put myself in a box. So that was a huge realization, really, and just starting to look at my life as having had a beginning where there's now a middle, and acknowledging that there will be an end, you know. And so, yeah, just doing any good it takes for me to, I mean, me personally, I felt like, which was a really good question as well that you asked me at the very beginning, you know, how do you feel in your heart? And it's only recently where I've started to feel like there's peace there, you know. For quite some time, there was an experience I had about several months back. And I was asking myself, like, why is it so hard to feel love? Why is it so hard to feel happy? Why is it so hard to feel peaceful? So with that, what I mean to say is I feel like I've had a long period throughout my lifetime where it just felt like, you know, I was in chaos and just feeling a lot of density and confusion. So, yeah, coming to realize and have this new perspective and to now acknowledge how I feel and where I'm at, mind, body, and soul. For the first time in my life, I'm proud, you know, and that just came from looking away from all the limitations that I might otherwise give myself, you know, and comparing myself and you know, perhaps basing my worth or what have you based on the validation from my external world, to just deciding that, yes, I am good enough, you know, and I can do anything I like, you know, but anything that I put my mind, anything I put my mind to is possible.
So you mentioned that out of journaling, a book has come to fruition. And as we speak, you're in the last parts of publishing and having a date for it. The title of the book is called Lockdown on Self-Love. Can you explain to the listeners why that title?
Yeah. So the title is, it's also got a subtitle, which I've recently added. I'll mention that in a minute. So the title is The Lockdown on Self-Love. And the reasons being is because, for one, this happened throughout the lockdown. But there's also another hidden meaning. It's that I came to discover self-love. I mean, if you had asked me about 3-4 years ago, I mean, I always thought, for example, I'll add in a different way. I always thought that self-love was somebody who was just arrogant, you know, had their heads far up their arse. And I had it all wrong, you know. I was never taught self-love. I was never taught the importance of taking care of yourself. And so far as the realization that I had, which was my biggest epiphany after heartbreak, you know, all the conversations I was having in my head, which is another story, to think that no one would ever love me again, you know, which then dawned on me that the most important relationship that we'll ever be in is a one with yourself, you know, that this relationship I have, you know, I'm the one that wakes up in the morning. I'm the one that brushes my teeth. I'm the one that takes care of me. I'm the one that's got to pick myself up when I'm down, you know, and I'm broken into a million pieces. No one else can do that for me. And I came to discover self-love and what that meant. And the lockdown for me was just me establishing self-love, getting to the bottom of basically what it means to have a relationship with yourself. So that's what the lockdown of self-love means. And ever since then as well, it's turned into the subtitle, How to Make Suffering Work for You. Because for me, it was an experience where basically I reverse engineered my life and I only concentrated on all my trauma, on all my bad memories. And from there, I was able to just little stuff like, for example, which I find I'm so thankful, and I almost can't find the words. So I'm having a few difficulties. I'm having a challenge where I haven't been able to see my daughter for the last 3 months. Reasons being because I guess I didn't address the book responsibly to at least articulate that, look, this is an account of all my trauma. Because for one, the response has been, it's clear to see that you're unstable. And I should have made that clear. And other things for reasons and subjects that I speak about in the book that are very sensitive and not really commonly spoken about. and it's just triggered the mother. And that's all right. But I've gained a lot of... I'm trying to find my words now because I almost felt like perhaps it wasn't responsible to mention that. But my point being is that I just understand. And there's no hard feelings. If she was to, I mean, I've video called my daughter and stuff like that. And with that, what I mean to say again is, if I was to see her mother tomorrow, I wouldn't make a fuss. None of it matters, you know? I mean, for one, it had to happen because I wouldn't have had otherwise been able to articulate the author's book as well as I have. So a lot of gems came from this kind of experience. But the reason, again, why I called it this, how to make suffering work for you, is just transmutes basically to look at the advantages with whatever challenges you might have that would otherwise, if you concentrated on all the negatives, would only cause anxiety and depression. To play the perspective game, basically, and at least having a sense of awareness so far as something I came to realize, really, which is, you know, we know what we know at the time based on what we know. And, you know, we go about things based on, you know, how we know and how to go about it and what have you. And And yeah, you know, we're constantly evolving so far as where we stand, you know, like, am I making sense where, you know, something I might have done about a month ago, I might now look at it and think, why did I do that?
Mm-hmm. Now that you've discovered self-love, what does your self-care look like?
Yeah, looks good. It looks good. I came to find out something really funny the other day. I was starting to feel maybe a little bit bad about having a nap. Maybe I'm getting on, you know, I'm 36 years old. Maybe a little bit. Maybe I'm getting on a little bit. But I really enjoy having a nap. And I'm kind of sometimes giving myself a bit of a hard time about it. Not really hard time, but in the sense that I, for example, right there, all of that is my rituals. Notes, that's part of my self-care. A set of affirmations I like to read in the morning and what have you. But one of the lists over there says, during the day, don't nap, instead meditate for an hour. And I might have not otherwise sometimes meditated, you know? And so I was starting to feel a little bit bad for having a nap. But then I kind of realized that actually I'm taking care of myself, you know? That's self-love right there. So when I had that understanding, I just threw myself on the bed and I was like, just snuggled up more than I ever snuggled up. And my self-care is looking good. I could probably, you know, there's always room for improvement, you know? There always is. I'd like to perhaps, you know, whiten my teeth a little bit more, what have you, you know, or, but no, I look after myself, you know, once a week I go for a spa and, I love going to the gym. I've not been able to go to the gym now though, because of that. I miss boxing. That's another interesting subject so far as I want to add about boxing. It's nice to see how far I've come so far as having taken care of myself, my well-being and just being mindful so far as little things like I used to always be insecure and struggle with self-esteem. But the more I was starting to be kind of mindful about that and as I said, so far as establishing what was already a fragile relationship that I had with myself and building on that, you know. And the way I started building on that, for one, I started boxing about 3 years ago. And now the relevance of the story is recently, around January, they installed a water bag in the gym, right in the middle of the gym. It's a huge establishment. And sometimes it's really busy. And when I installed that water bag, literally in the middle of the gym, I eyed it up and I was like, oh, that looks amazing. You know, I'd love to go punch that and have a round. But straight away, I was like, oh, no. But, you know, I was starting to feel really self-conscious, you know. Like, for one, like, what are the guys going to think, you know? They're going to think I'm just, like, trying to maybe cause trouble or look at me. I'm an alpha male, you know, so to speak. And all sorts was going on in my head, what other people might think of me, rather than all the things that I should be thinking about myself and enjoying myself and being present in. Going about an activity that I enjoy. And so I picked myself up and went for it. And yeah, you know, I might have felt nervous. And at first, I couldn't even throw a punch in the first 15 seconds. So awkward, you know, and inadequate. But ever since then, like every day I go there and I love it. And it's always such a proud moment to acknowledge how far I've come so far as. So yeah, so far as my self-care, that's, you know, I wake up every morning and meditate. And I put my headphones in, listen to my affirmations. Whilst I have a cuppa, the kettle is boiling. I do my push-ups. And I just try to talk to myself nicely, you know. I think that's as best you can do, really. And that's again, what I came to realize so far as that the most important relationship there will ever be is the one with yourself. Because as well with that is like, how are you treating yourself? Because how you treat yourself is most likely how you treat others, you know. And I'm really proud of myself to be at this point. And I mean, one of my biggest pains, for example, is I've only ever been in two serious long-term relationships, one of which I've got a child by age. And you know, that's been really hard for me, especially just being a single father. I mean, at my lowest points, you know, I might have thought that whenever the ladies move on, that the guys that they'll get involved with, you know, be around the children more than I could have ever wished for, you know. And so, but for me, I'm thankful for the journey that I'm on, because I can at least lead by example and teach them some of these stuff that I never knew, you know, that I've only just come to learn in the recent couple of years. So far as well, like, you know, the more I take care of myself, the more I take care of my belongings, the more I take care of my environment, and thus the more I take care of other people, you know. And that goes with respect as well, and with love as well. The more I can love myself, the more I can appreciate other people, the more I can offer courtesy. So, yeah.
Who do you think would benefit the most by reading this book?
Good question. I think anybody that's got a... Who might or might not have an understanding about self-destructive behaviors, really. Anybody who might not or might be aware that they have a victim mentality. I know I didn't know I had a victim mentality. Anybody seeking answers, really, as well. Just an understanding if there is more to life, you know? Because that was my biggest breakthrough, really. My biggest breakthrough was really just, and this is a big message I go in great length through the book. Because for one, I came to realize that I was feeling so shameful to just be alive, to just be me. And I was like, wow. And for one as well, I came to look at myself for the first time and be like, wow, I'm alive. Like, you know, just having that realization of what it actually means to be alive and actually be present right now and just have this experience, which I'll add that I came to realize that we just take for granted. And so it's just an inspiring book to come to realize, to give you, it's a very thought-provoking book, and it's very insightful. It's very, gets you to self-inquire yourself. It really gets you to think. And so anybody who might be feeling like they're a little bit lost and feeling misunderstood, feeling like no one gets them and just feeling like, you know, there is more to life and, you know, perhaps are feeling depressed and at the worst case scenario is suicidal. I think it's just a beautiful articulation of the whole philosophy of what it means to be alive and what it means to be an individual, really, and what it means to just be a human being.
Okay. You mentioned that the book is a lot of biography. That means there has to be some transparency and some honesty. What are the subject matters that you touch into that made you create a subtitle of suffering and how you can, you know, harness that?
I was suppressing a lot of stuff. We have this habit of just, we grab whatever might have happened and we just suppress it in the deepest aspects of our belly. And I think that's one of my biggest pains, really. Feeling like the dust is just constantly getting kicked up under the carpet, not addressing subjects because they might otherwise be sensitive. My last chapter, chapter 17, is called The Magic Mushroom Ceremony. Mm. It's probably, you know, might be my spirituality and my initiation into personal development for me personally was due to psychedelics. DMT and ayahuasca in particular. So it's probably a good idea to put that out there. But chapter the last chapter for one almost warranted the book being burnt altogether. Almost destroyed it. Well, saying that, when I first started writing a book, I wrote the introduction and half of the of chapter one, which is called The Inner Child. And when I started to I shut the laptop for about 3 to 4 months. And the reason being is because, like, I had already written out all the chapters, or at least come to understanding what the chapters were called. once I was going to bring light into what happened when I was like 4 years old, and then the awareness of what I was going to speak about later on, what happened when I was 9 years old, and then what I was going to speak about was into my adult life, you know. There were so many times where I was just literally here in my room, just screaming in my head, like, what are you doing? And so many times I almost deleted the book. But what I mean to say is, like, if anything warranted the book being deleted altogether was the last chapter. But I'm grateful for that chapter at the same time. For anybody that closely knows me, I was a mess for months. I was a huge mess. My anxiety was through the roof. I didn't know whether I was doing the right thing or not. There's a lot of interesting subjects in that chapter as well, which I'm so thankful for, because one of my biggest passions and the whole reason why I've done this really is because through my example, I want to be that guy that other people can confide to and open up to. I never thought I'd have an aspiration of being a coach. But that's where my heart is at now, you know. And I guess that came through a lot of pain of always feeling like I'm under conflict with everyone, you know. Like anybody that mattered to me, it seemed like anytime I wanted to open up, because of the subjects is too sensitive. And you know, when like you have you want to have a real heart to heart about something that's important, you know. But you like that, you know. And it just becomes chaos before you know you're shouting at each other or avoiding one another. And that just creates more confusion, really, and more alienation. And to some, like myself, for example, more depression.
With self-help and when you come to self-love, it sounds like a very blissful place and it's just all magical. And it feels like everything, you know, is all erased, where there's still the story and they're still looking at the past. So at times when we hear about, you know, the self-help, we don't always hear about the transparency of what a person has had to navigate through their life. And then that can be very, daunting for people not to even want to engage and go into that portal.
Allowing myself to be transparent and being so open, and perhaps as well detailed, which is what scared me the most as well, which might have been instances where, for example, I wanted to dilute it and make it socially acceptable, for example. But in the height of promoting transparency transparency and that vulnerability is a true estimate to strength, is where I found a lot of my courage from, really. So get to the point, to answer your question, really, I had a drug issue for about 10 years. And this is a relevance, for example, why perhaps I'm going through the challenges that I'm going with through at the minute, because it was of great concern that I talk about drugs and that I'm now talking about other drugs, which is plant medicine. I talk about abuse, child abuse, that I went through when I was young, also social inadequacy. I talk about what it feels like to live as a very insecure man, I talk about, you know, being lonesome, not having any friends. Where, you know, at one point through my drug use, it was all I had, you know, I formed, unfortunately at the time, unfortunately or fortunately, it's, however way you want to look at it, you know, for me, it was, came from a lot of trauma. So I was escaping reality. I didn't know how to deal with my emotions in my thought process. And that's another thing I touch bases on the book so far, as we're not taught how to process our emotions. We're not taught how to process our thoughts. So I go into great length into that and why not, you know, and how we form into, how we form addictions in the first place, how they all come from trauma. So I go into that and what I also formed another habit from the drugs, which was, I was under this this understanding with myself because I didn't have any friends, and also because through habitual, really, that what else do I do in myself? I mean, what's the one fun thing that I can do? And for me, the most fun thing that I could do, especially after being working in a manual industry, I'm a plasterer by trade. I work in the construction industry. You know, it came to a point where I would put in so many hours. I became my own boss. It came with these many pros and cons, but with these many challenges. For example, clients not paying. Sometimes it came to a stage for several months where I was always owed about £3,000. And that created a lot of strain, especially as well, considering I had a drug problem, which didn't help. And I had a family as well to protect. The only one thing fun that I could do, having no friends, and as well from an habitual that came from trauma, really, just escaping my pain, my feelings, and this and the other, back to what I formed with the drugs, which relieved all of that. But I ended up forming a sex addiction as well. One of which, as I said, the most fun thing that I could think of. I remember having this conversation, actually. I was like, what's the most fun thing that I can do? And I was like, yeah, I remember having this conversation. I was like, yeah, but what can I do? And what is it? What else is there to do? And I was like, yeah, you could just get yourself a few bags, you know, you lock yourself up in a hotel, what have you. At one point, you know, I'd even go to a sex shop, you know, and buy toys and what have you. So that's what I would get up to. And but the problem is, you know, this is something I also talk about so far as, which will be for anybody that's interested to read and find out more. I won't go into details. But as a heterosexual man as well, anytime that I was then sober, it just created more shame, more insecurity. And it made me feel even more so troublesome, you know. Mm-hmm. And never mind as well with the you know, what drugs do, which deplete your dopamine and just makes you far worse than you even was, you know. And there was some times where I'd even sometimes do it a few times a week just to numb all of that and escape from feeling so suicidal, really, and depressed. So I talk about a lot of sensitive subjects that men might otherwise not speak about because they don't feel like it's a man thing to do. And as well, so far as the subjects that I speak about, which was my epiphany, really, so far as plant medicine, which is really interesting as well. Of all the drugs that I would never do, or if there are a few, like, for example, I would never do heroin. My choice of which formed out of, which is another reason why I wrote the book. There was a compound called methadrone. And that was sold here in legally. You could buy it at record shops. It was sold under plant fertilizer, not for human consumption. But they were sold in record shops where you could buy tickets for concerts and et cetera. I mean, whoever put this out there knew exactly, you know, what they were putting out there. And many of us were addicted. And that's what I discovered and all of this formed. And it was highly addictive. Now it came to a point where it was shipped from China. That's what it was made from. But at one point, something happened over in China where they made it illegal to produce, and anybody that might produce it would come under great consequences. So it was dry; the streets were dry over it. Now, the interesting part so far is as well being a family man and everything I've mentioned so far is having a business and stuff like that. You know. That compound was 1/10 of the price of cocaine. Now, the whole relevance, I'm just trying to kind of paint a picture, was with the psychedelics, I always disagreed with that because of a memory I had. I remember ages ago, I came across a few people who were having a party. They were under the influence of psychedelics. And they looked like they were just literally on the floor melting, you know. And I looked at them, I was like, wow, you guys are really frying your own brains, you know. But the interesting thing from that is that psychedelics came into my life at a very interesting time. It came right before the lockdown, and it came right in the middle between my breakup and feeling suicidal. I hate to admit it, but I used to fantasize about how I would go about taking my life. And that came around that time, right after the breakup, around the time of me feeling suicidal and being close to thinking if I could just do it and if it would just be quick. I mean, how else would I do it? I thought that was the cleanest way. And then before the lockdown, which I find really interesting. And so I talk about what it's like to have a spiritual awakening. What does a spiritual awakening mean? And I go in great depths about spirituality, the concept of God. Something that I came to find out really that God is just life itself. It's everything as a whole. It's consciousness. And so far as from the table to the air we breathe, you know, everything is a vibration and a state of consciousness. And there's just levels to consciousness in one way, form or another.
Mm-hmm. How is it navigating being a man? How do you navigate through your sensitivity?
I embrace it now. I embrace it. And I think I'm really thankful, really, if I'm honest with you. What saved me was personal development and especially spirituality. I've always loved metaphysics, but the more I read about, so for example, in my book, it was really interesting because I talk about some aspects of my anatomy, which I felt so ashamed to explore. But then it led me into spirituality to then find out I've got energy centers and what have you. But where I'm going with this is to find out about non-duality and that I have both the feminine and I have the masculine. And so it's really interesting that you ask that question because I've always been quite flamboyant. And I don't even know if that's the right word. But I'm quite, I don't know the right way to describe that. But I carry myself with a sense of, I don't know the right word, maybe it is flamboyant. But I remember ages ago being questioned about that. I was like, oh, you're such a poser, you know, you're such a poser. And I used to feel ashamed even about that. Like, oh, all right, cool. Like, for example, a guy, I might be at the train station or whatever, you know, and I might have my legs crossed like this and I might be a little bit, you know, eccentric. And I might all of a sudden then just recompose myself to make myself more male, more masculine. So I've embraced that sensitive side of me. I've allowed myself to be vulnerable. For a long time, I only found out about 10 months ago that I hated myself, and I hated myself for the very reason that I was so insecure, that I was so inadequate, and I used to hate the way I used to conduct myself. But now, with all of that, is I just allow myself to be, you know, and I allow myself to be that, you know, if I'm being a little bit sensitive and I might, for example, like, you know, me and you might be having this conversation right now, or even before we had this podcast, right? Our nerves is going to start, you know, playing up, you know, and we're going to be like, oh, you know, we might even question the way we look, you know, or questioning the way our tone of voice or what have you, you know. But it's just allow and just to find peace with where you are right now, and not question it. Just allow yourself to be organic and let things unfold.
Ask you a reflective question. I'm going to have you go back to your 18-year-old self. You're going to bring this awareness to your 18-year-old self. And you only have three words you can tell that 18-year-old self. So that's why I said it's reflective. So you're going to take time to reflect on it or whatever comes up. They can either be words just that they have a big impact, or three words that make a sentence, whatever comes naturally for you of what you think this awareness can tell that 18-year-old. What would those words be? Take time to reflect.
Wow. I'm just trying to feel into what it was like being 18. That's such a tough question. Do you know why? I don't mind saying as well, is something I'm still healing now. Little things like, is something I'm still healing, which is my masculine is a little bit wounded. I've always felt unsafe around males. My dad wasn't around a lot. I was born in South Africa, and we moved back to Portugal, and then we moved over here. My dad was always left behind. To transition, and that would be years sometimes. So I didn't really have a male figure around, and little did my family know as well was that I was groomed when I was young, and I also had an experience when I was 4 years old, which brought about a lot of confusion. So the reason why filling into that question was and the reason why how everything grew over the years of just feeling, which is quite sad, really. I could kind of wallow up here. Great. Nice one, that. Which was, I hated how insecure I was. It was horrible to deal with, you know? I remember being around anytime I was out, anytime I was with our family, or even sometimes my own family, like, you know, where we might perhaps not have a decent relationship, but then in particular, other males, but in general, I was just really insecure. Now, breathing into when I was 18, it came to a point where, wow, this is such a good question, because it's making me reflect a lot. Okay, so having mentioned that, I'm also going to mention this. I remember going on a holiday, a little holiday with all my friends. And one thing led to another because of my insecurities. There was a girl that I liked, and she kind of liked me, but nothing ever happened. And at this point, I was starting to act up a certain way, put on a bravado. Being, what's the right word? Having an alter ego, so to speak. So I went from being very shy to just being really loud. But deep down, I was just a bloody mess, you know? And it was an interesting conversation what she said to me at the end of that, which was, she was like, why can't you just be a sweet guy? Why can't you just be sweet, you know? Why can't it just be sweet and nice, you know? Or was it the other way around? I don't even know now. But My point being, you know, I started to hang around with the wrong crowd. And the reason why I started to hang around with the bad crowd is because I admired them, you know, troublemakers. They stuck up for themselves, but they also smoke drugs and what have you. And that's how I started to smoke and stuff like that. So if I really had anything to say to my younger self, and I think this is a really good conversation for any 18-year-old, or any advice for any 18-year-old to have, really, which I suppose is having felt into everything with what I've just said so far as socially, is going back to, I think, the biggest advice you can give any 18-year-old, anyone coming into their young adolescence, really, is just concentrate on your schooling, you know. Learn the importance of your education. And forget about partying. Forget about friends. Forget about all that. Forget about girls, you know. That's always going to stay there. You know, the parties, it's always going to be there. The nightlife, it's always going to be there. The girls, always going to be there. The friends, always going to be there. They're not going to just disappear. But, you know, you're just concentrate on your life, on your career that's coming up, because the facts are is you're going to have loads of responsibilities coming up. There's going to be a time you're going to leave your parents. You know, you're going to meet a girl. You might have a family, you know. And all the time of you partying and then, you know, recovering throughout the weekend and spending all the money that you could have saved, you could have invested, you know, but instead you're blowing. You're just wasting your time and giving away your life for this illusion, really, that you feel like you've got to make the most of life because you're only young once. But the truth of it, you know, we're only adults once as well. We're only 30 once. We're only 40 once. And the facts of the matter is that we need a career, you know, and a roof over our head. And it comes to a point where, like, for example, even myself, I haven't had a holiday for 7 years, you know. So those are the necessities in an adult's life, you know, being able to have a good quality of life, basically. So, yeah, what I would say to myself when I was 18 was just, look, mate, concentrate on your studies, you know. Concentrate on your studies. Forget about these kids. Forget about the girls. Just do right by yourself right now, because all of this is what you're going to have in your future. And if anything, like crack on if you want, but you're going to miss out on it. You could, whatever you think you could have now, you could have better later on, basically.
Where can the listeners find the book?
They can find the book on Amazon. What I would advise is whatever country you're from, go on your own Amazon and just type in The Lockdown on Self-Love. It'll be available as from the 8th of April. And when you read it, be so kind to leave me a review. In our way, other people can also find our way to discovering a great book.
Where can the listeners find you?
I'm right here. Hello. Hello. I'll scream louder. I'll wave a flag. Well, I'm active on Facebook. My name is Antonio D'Souza. So that's Antonio space D-E space S-O-U-S-A. I'm also on Instagram. And I think the best place to reach out with me is Facebook. And I don't know if you share any links and stuff like that.
Yes, I will be. Yes, I will be.
Yeah. So reach out from that. I'm also on a friends list. Antonio D'Souza, I'm on Facebook. And my banner is the most important relationship there will ever be in is the one with yourself.
Is there anything you would like to leave the listeners?
Yeah. Part of me wants to say, look, don't take life for granted. No? And I mean, don't take life for granted, because we, for whatever reason, you know, concentrate on all the negatives and what have you, you know, instead of like, I mean, this is what I do now. And it's taken, sometimes it's taken great discipline, really. No one person wakes up in the morning, you know, thinking to themselves, today I'm going to have a shit day, you know. How can I make today the worst day ever? But no one person either wakes up in the morning, gives themselves a kiss in the hand and say, have the best day ever, you legend. And so try to take that attitude, you know, just throw yourself out of bed in the morning, you know, and just do your best to go to sleep, you know, smiling about beautiful things, and do the same when you wake up in the morning. And, you know, whatever challenges you have, just do your best not to fret and frown and complain and moan about it to your friends, you know. That's not going to help anything, and it sure ain't going to change anything. And if anything, you know, do as I did. I've got my challenges at this particular moment, as I said, so far as, you know, with whatever is going on with the mother of my child. But at the same time, like, you know, I could concentrate on all the negatives, but at the same time as well, I can be saying to myself, well, I'm just packaging myself up to be a much better dad, you know, and to as well make sure that I can do the work. So, for example, whenever it comes to then that I do get to see my daughter and her mother, that I'm an example to my daughter on how, even though I'm not with a mother, of what it means to be a mom and dad and still be able to have a decent relationship, to be able to authentically smile and just be at peace and what have you. Because at the same time, you know, I think this is the kind of illusion that we have with ourselves, you know, so far as even breakups or what have you, you know. We weren't born together. We weren't joined to the hip, you know. There was a time that I didn't know her. And we should allow, is what I mean to say, the freedom to be authentically us, you know. And we kind of sometimes have a habit so far as somebody might say something that you don't agree with. And we try to kind of like tell them that they should think different. And I think that's wrong, you know. And I think we should just accept and be forgiving, make peace, and just show one another courtesy. And you know, no one man person will agree. Well, no one person will admit to this fact. But individually, each one of us feel like we are the most important person in the world, you know. And we ought to treat each other like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's very interesting. I don't know if it's such a high topic right now, yet it's still there. It's a sellable point about the narcissist. And some people think it's always outside of them. And it's like, no, the empath and the narcissist. For sure. Each person has those two elements. It's just more prevalent in one than the other. And so recognizing, you know, we all come into this world. Kids are very narcissistic. It's all about me. And so that's why trauma can be misinterpreted, because you're trying to keep yourself safe and thinking that you're the cause of everything and not seeing other people's stories and other people's actions. So in that, it's allowing yourself to have vulnerable conversations of exploring outside of that. And yeah. It takes work, it takes warrior work. I call it warrior work, yeah. To still be sensitive when you're enraged and angered and want to feel protected and safe. When we feel unsafe, our animal instincts come up. And yeah. So to navigate those turbulent waters requires warrior work to bring us back into a co-regulated state, a ventral state, at peace state, a blissful state, a joyful state. It's warrior work. And I want to thank you for coming on the podcast, sharing with the listeners your navigation into spirituality, the book that you've written, and also being so transparent and honest with a lot of sensitive matters with your own life. It's not talking in a third person, you're actually speaking on some very vulnerable, sensitive topics and being open about it. And I want to thank you for that gift that you have released into the world. So thank you, Antonio, for being you.
Thank you for having me on your show. Absolute pleasure. Thank you. Yeah. I really enjoyed myself.
Good. Remember to be kind with yourself.
Definitely. Okay.
Thank you for making it all the way to the end. Please like, share, and subscribe to our podcast, liftoneself.com. If you have any comments or questions, you can email us at info@liftoneself.com. Until next time, remember, be gentle and kind with yourself.